This tape recording is made on March the 5th, 1980, ¿verdad?
That's right.
Go ahead. Pretend this is not
this here. Is March the 3rd. This is March the 3rd, okay. I wanted to tell you something before we get started.
Okay.
We wanted to get into the entertainment business around high school, when coming out of high school. Because of the influences of Elvis Presley and all the rock and roll era in the 50s, we kind of started playing more for record hops, high schools. We used to play places like Patio Andaluz, Arthur Murray's, the Tourist Ballroom, the VFW where we are today. We started here.
This is the VFW?
Mm-hmm, this is the VFW. And we were playing here like maybe once every 2 weeks, you know. The Edgewood Canteen, places like that. And there were, the record hops was a very big thing, paid 50 cents, 75 cents to
when
get
would
in.
This be? What years?
You're talking about the early part of 50s, about the middle of the 50s.
Middle of the 50s, onto,
I guess the height of it was around 62, 63, 64, right in there was the height of it. And then things started changing. Let me concentrate on that time for a moment. The big thing was record hops, and that was during the time when you couldn't go and dance on the gym floor with shoes. You had socks, and more or less where the Bobby sock record hop dances came from. Okay, when he got away from there and he went to other ballrooms, then we went to these places I was telling you about. Those places, eventually the gate was getting a little bit better and they were charging a little more for the ticket to get in.
Yeah.
But originally we started at 50 cents, 75 cents. The highest price we had was 99 cents a person. And then we started branch out to Arthur Murray's, to Patio Andaluz and La Villita and all this. Okay, then the car clubs was playing a big important role at that time too. But we were still basically concentrating on just more or less English music during that time. Okay, it was called Sun in the Sun Glows at that time. Okay, Sun in the Sun Glows existed for about 4.5 years. Toward the time that Sun in the Sun Glows was gonna break up, for no real reason, I think it was more the idea that we were growing and growing, and at the time we had decided to record, before we decided breaking up, we decided to record a song, and it was called Talk to Me. The song was recorded, never in our minds did we ever think that it was going to be that big. Up to today, we've gone through about maybe 6.5 million records. That through the years, as long as you're alive, you'll be selling an X amount of Talk to Me every year. Not anywhere close to when the record was a big record, but it just kept on and on, a little flow through every year. Every time you inject a new product into the market, it seems like, especially if you have anything that's going to get semi-hot because of concentrated airplay, it seems like you bring back that memory of, yeah, this is the guys that recorded Talk to Me, you know. You know what, I don't have Talk to Me. I lost my record Talk to Me. There you go to the store again and pick up another copy. So this is what I'm talking about, you know, keeping, going back to buying more and more. So anyway, it turns out that in the 50s, we were concentrating on English, okay. We recorded Talk to Me, okay. Then the people from Columbia at the time were interested in signing on contracts, forget now whether it's Mercury or Columbia, one of the two, and they were coming off with this 15-page contract where they would earn own just about everything of the guy who had recorded, which was myself. But I was in high school, so I couldn't sign the contract. Well, the people I was working with at the time figured that when I did graduate, I only had 1-2 years to go, and they figured that I was probably going to just get up and run and go big time, you know. Well, that wasn't my plan, but I couldn't convince those guys that's what was going to happen. So, okay, so we broke up the group, okay? And then I decided to form my own. The group was called Sunny and the Sunliners at the time when we formed. Okay.
This was when?
This was in, about 68, 69.
You mean
by
the
now.
Sunliners are not, I thought that you had formed them even before then.
Well, we had formed them semi-formed them, but we weren't really recording much or anything, so records will show that around 68, 69, by that time we were already, you know, getting in the full swing again, because the Sungrows were still kind of being played a lot on the radio, even though we had already started forming. The Sungrows had the concentrated airplay at the time, and it was going to be a question of getting people to understand that it was the same guy as far as the front was concerned, but it was another group, and we had changed our name, and we were continuing with a different name.
A little question just came. Your real name is Ildefonso, is that correct?
You're right, that's right, yeah.
But Ildefonso. They used to call you Bunny, right?
At that time, yeah.
And then switched the same.
And, well, it's an interesting thing, because
why did they call
at the
you
time
Bunny?
We were coming out of high school, and we started our first Sun in the Sunglows group. We had seen, we were doing our one-night stands. We were just starting to go out on the road. As a matter of fact, we were going, to be specific, we were going our way to Houston. And those days, top salary was $150 a night. Boy, that was, you were really cleaning up, you know. I mean, for everybody in the group. So, anyway, it turns out that we're on our way to Houston. And we're breaking our backs, man. We still that to that time, to that point, we still didn't have really a name. We played, but we didn't have a name. Sunny, well, not even that. I don't know what the, I can't remember what they called us. No, because it was still in the Sunglows, really. And I forget what we used to call ourselves. Now I come to think about it. Anyway, we saw this sign on the side of the road going to Houston, and it said, believe it or not, it said Sunglow Feed Company. And it was one of the, like a Purina dog chow thing, right. Type thing, right? And these people make food for animals and all this, but it was called the Sunglow Feed Company. Boy, I sure like the way that sounded. And I told the guy who was running the group at the time, I says, boy, you know, like, that was Manuel Guerra.
Yeah.
He has Amen Recording Studio now. And I said, look, man, that name there sounds good, man. You know, I've got some friends at school. Maybe we could start making some designs and things, you know, to see how it looks with Sunglow. Well, we liked the way, we all liked the way it rang. You know, Sunglow sounded good. So, okay, well, the Sunglows, okay. But look, in that time, you know, it was Lil Anthony and the Imperials and Lil Willie John and so and things like that. It was always something and something, you know. Martha and the Vandellas, you know. Diana Ross and the Supremes, you know. So we decided, okay, we have to put an and. But, man, I used to call me Bunny, man, when I was little, you know, because I was real light-complected. All of a sudden, man, somebody left me out in the sun or something, man. And anyway, so from Bunny, really, from Bunny, we decided, well, man, we can't go with Bunny, man. Bunny and the Sunglows ain't going to sound too cool. So it was a very simple thing of just dropping one letter, man, which was the B to an S. The first three letters would automatically still pertain to the sun. S-U-N-N-Y. And sun in the sun glows, well, sun with sun, and sunny good. So it was Sunny and the Sun Glows. Okay, we ran with Sunny and the Sun Glows up until we decided to start another group. When we started another group, man, it broke my head to come up. I wanted to stay with sun, you know, the idea of sun. So all we could think about it was, the more we put it on paper and came up with ideas, the only thing we come up with was liners, the edge along the sun, the edging of the sun. So it came Sunny and the Sunliners. And then from then, of course, we took off.
Wasn't there a group called the Sunliners in the 50s?
There was a group. There was a group that's in the market in Top 40 now called Rare Earth. And believe it or not, they were working out of California, and they were called Sunliners.
I remember there was a record very popular in 59. I don't remember that, but I remember, I think the group is called the Sunliners.
Okay, I know what you're talking about. I just remember what you're talking about. I really do. At the time, the group was called the Skyliners.
Skyliners. Right.
And they had a song called Since I Don't Have You.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the group I was.
Yeah, Skyliners. It was Skyliners. That's what it
was. That's right.
Okay, so we go from the 50s to the 60s. Okay. In the latter part of the 60s, I mean the early part of 60s, okay, here we had recorded this Talk to Me song. Okay. Well, it started to make a little noise, started to play, getting a lot of concentrated airplay. Okay. Then, at the time that we broke up, there was this guy named Huey P. Moe came into the picture. He picked up the song, ran with it, and made it a national hit. Okay, through Huey P. Moe at the time, and the song being hot, it was number one in the top 100 in the country for 14 straight weeks in a row.
This was in 63?
63, right. Yeah, in 63. Latter part of 62 through 63. Okay. In this time, we released a few more songs that were later were sleepers and would later take off once Talk to Me was going to slow down. Logically, the other song's going to get attention after you have something big to find out what else you can do or what else you have produced that we would like to get hold of. At the time, we were recording for, okay, in the 50s, Manuel Guerra formed his own record company called Sun Glow Records, okay, to go with our group.
Right.
Okay, then when I left Manuel, we went to a company called Teardrop Records. Now, Teardrop was the one that picked up Talk to Me and ran with it to make
that
it a national record.
Huey
P. Moe's record company. Okay. So we record. We didn't re-record the song. We took it from Sunglow Records, made a deal, and went with Teardrop Records, switching over the record. That's all we did. Change the labels on it. Really, that's all you do. You don't go back in and record it again. Okay. You can see why you wouldn't want to do that. If it's already on wax and it's already balanced in a way where it is a hit, why tinker with it anymore, right? Leave it alone. So, okay, we ran with that. Okay. Then, Huey P. Moe, since we were bilingual, we were Spanish, all Spanish boys, they figured, okay, hey, well, we ought to, you know, we ought to try something, some new ideas. You know, you can do other things other than just this. So the more we started to tinker with it, we came up with a song called Cariño Nuevo. Cariño Nuevo, needless to say that at the time I was getting out of high school, I fell in love with this girl I was going to marry. At the time, Cariño Nuevo was the perfect thing to go with for my first album, not only because Cariño Nuevo means new love, but it was going to be the first, well, my only time that I've married. I'm still married to the same girl. So we went with Cariño Nuevo, and I used her for the jacket, and it's me and her walking together hand in hand on the front part of this jacket. Well, the album was called Cariño Nuevo. Being that we were getting all this noise, all this attention off of Talk to Me was the reason why I think more than anyone else in our market, La Onda Chicana got a chance to someone pay attention to it. Now, Little Joe had recorded a few things by then, but was not really getting the attention. So coming off of Talk to Me, and already people wanted to know, ah, man, this is a Spanish boy, man, that did this, man. Wow, you know, first time Spanish boy gets into a top 40 with a national hit and all this. And they looked into what we were doing. Cariño Nuevo was there. So, and the more people, especially in the Chicanos, you know, the more Chicanos paid attention to, hey, man, this is a
Cariño Nuevo was an album?
Cariño Nuevo was an album. Cariño Nuevo was the name of the song that headlined the album.
Right.
But the rest of the album was all recorded Chicano too. There was nothing
Can
English.
Can you remember some of the other songs?
Pa' que sientas lo que siento.
Is Ando Sufriendo y Penando on that album?
Sufriendo y Penando, yeah. Tu Nueva Vida, Cariño Nuevo. Okay, and more or less, Teardrop. Those were about, there was about five or six of them that headlined that whole album.
That was with Teardrop?
That was Teardrop.
Who produced the record?
Huey P. Moe produced the record.
But
the whole
decided on the songs?
I picked all the songs, and all the musicians at the time, we all together, like we're doing today, we put our material together, all together. And then we just recorded for that particular company. Okay. That was to be followed by many, many albums.
Can you name some?
Okay. Cariño Nuevo, El Preferido, El Internacional, El Monito de Chocolate, Adelante, Canta Sunny, Cariñosamente, Siempre. Okay, those just a few right off the top of my,
these,
top of my head.
The ones you're talking about right now, are these?
Through the years, that were produced through
not
the years.
Not necessarily in the 60s, they go in the 70s.
No, they go right through our first one was in 59. All the rest of them spread out through the rest of the years. About two or three a year, okay? So now, those were just the top of my mind, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, during that time, we also, okay, I should take a step at a time. Okay, then we went to the 60s, okay? In the 60s, we didn't realize we were gonna get took on Talk to Me. We got took, we got burned, okay.
How, in what way?
Our contracts weren't fulfilled. Okay, I had signed contracts with my parents co-signing my contract because I was 15 years old, 16 years old. So my parents had to co-sign my contracts. I had to fulfill them. I couldn't get out of them, or they would go legally up against my parents. Mm-hmm. So I had to fulfill them, which I did. But during that time, I'm writing songs on my own, like Put Me in Jail, Smile, I Cry Later, Golly Gee, Just a Moment. Things that were later to be, right after Talk to Me, were later some of the songs that kept us hot after Talk to Me. Mm-hmm. But I was writing them and not giving them to Teardrop. I would let them pick their songs, and I recorded what they wanted to record. I would write my own songs, which I would later start my own company and produce my own Key Lock Records, and then produce my own material, okay, that I had written. Okay, I was writing English material. I was also writing Spanish material that I would record later with Mariachi, which was what we did later. We recorded with Mariachi albums, and I would produce my own tunes that I wrote, or material that I would pick and rearrange to do with Mariachi. Mm-hmm. Okay. Then, at the same time, not forgetting La Onda Chicana. La Onda Chicana is still growing all this time, and it's getting stronger and stronger and stronger. But we didn't concentrate totally into Onda Chicana. Onda Chicana, after a while, became just one phase of what we were doing. Then the Mariachi thing was another, and then the English thing was another. Okay. Never did we think that in time we would have an opportunity for a movie. Okay, we worked with Antonio Aguilar, Flor Silvestre, and most of the crew that works with them in the majority of their movies. Okay, I wrote a song for La Onda Chicana called Cariñito, which is also the title of another album that we released. Antonio liked the song. Lucha Villa recorded it in Mexico. They liked what they heard. So Antonio called and said, look, man, I would like Sonny to take a small part in this picture I'm working on called La Muerte de Pancho Villa. Okay. He gave us 1 week to take Cariñito from La Onda Chicana flavor into the revolutionary years in 1 week's time. So, man, we did a lot of studying, dig up books, find out what instrumentation was being used. How do we sound like in the year of the Revolutionary War? So, okay.
I'm not sure anybody could be sure exactly what it sounded
no,
like.
No, but we did get down to finding out that, first of all, there were no acoustical instruments. I mean, there were no electronic instruments. They were all acoustical. So, okay, the guitar comes in acoustical, the kind that we're using for trios and for mariachis. Okay. And then the bass was going to be acoustical upright bass. Okay, but we didn't want to record that. So we got a synthesizer that's electronic, fixed it, adjusted to where it would sound like an acoustical bass, more a flavor of a tuba.
Right.
Okay, that did that end of it. And then the drums, the little drums that there was in the time, was just a snare. How they got the snare to just be there and the rest of it, I guess, came later. But, okay, so you would just bang on the snare. That was it. Accordion was front in it. And then the only other thing we heard that sounded revolutionary would be clarinets and flutes. And they were all non-electronic instruments. So we put a combination of those things, and that's what we ran with in Cariñito. So there came the movie, okay? Now, through the years, we went on and on recording into three or four different type of things, okay? Then at one time, we leaned over toward Conjunto. And toward Conjunto, we're still doing a little bit of it now. We just add flavor a little bit to La Onda Chicana with just very little touches of accordion every once in a while. And that's it. Nothing deep to where you play accordion from one end to the other on the song, but just little flavors off and on, and then get out. You know, because we're basically more into orchestration in La Onda Chicana.
But isn't it true that maybe not your band in particular,
okay,
but it's, I think, perhaps might be true of your band also, but isn't it true that a lot of the, if a lot of the feeling of orquestas when they play polkas, or if not polkas, at least corridas, pero, you know, that it shares a great deal with the way the conjuntos play the polkas, corridas, at least the more sophisticated conjuntos like Bernal and Oscar Hernandez and people like that?
Well,
what about Roberto Pulido? I mean, he has put in a couple of saxophones and
mm-hmm.
I mean, let me ask you the question this way. Is there any relationship, now that you mentioned, you know, borrowing a little bit from conjunto, between orquesta and conjunto? What is the relationship over the years between these two? You call Orquesta Onda Chicana, what do you call Conjunto? Norteño?
Okay, no. A conjunto is classified as, yeah, you could put it into norteño, because there is a lot of conjuntos. Okay.
But what's the relationship?
Okay, let me tell you this. Conjuntos, we have, you can break up almost any facet of music that you want to get. You can break it down to deeper than what you see on the surface. For example, when you talk about Latin music, you're usually right now talking about Latin music into magazines, into media. You're talking about Puerto Rican music from New York. Or the music of mariachi that comes from José Alfredo and Lucha Villa in Mexico. Okay, that's it. So for people that are in the media, they don't understand what Mexican music is. They think that that's it. Tropical New York because of the media in New York. You have, over a million Puerto Ricans in New York City alone. Okay, when you get to Mexico, all you hear is mariachi. Okay, now to most people in the media, they think that's it. But that is not it, because you also have, you have Puerto Rican music, you have a mariachi, you have conjuntos that are doing an entirely different thing. You have orquestas, which are doing another thing. And you have Grupo Tropicales coming in from Mexico are doing a completely different thing now. Okay? Now you also have Los Grupos Regionales, which we tag them Regionales, which would be more into your Los Únicos, Chacha y Los Chachos, that type of thing. In conjuntos, you're talking about Tone de la Rosa, you're talking about Roberto Pulido. Now, Roberto Pulido will come a little later on in this conversation, yeah, because I'll show you what happens. Roberto could be classified really as a conjunto and forget him. Altogether, drop him in there and forget it. What has helped him now to reach a little better medium is that orquestas came into being La Onda Chicana, and he said, "Okay, I'll reach a medium. I'll go conjunto, and I'll go tenors, saxophones at the same time." Which, if you remember, there has been in our past quite a few conjuntos that had the alto effect. Sure. Except they were doing it between one alto and the accordion, doing first and second voices. Okay? So it's not really that new. But what he has done is the magic of the voice of Roberto Pulido of a good percentage. Now, that you have the two altos and the accordion gives you an extra flavor. But it really, most of the percentage goes to Roberto with what he's doing with his particular style. Now, the guys are good, that they work with him and everything, but it's basically Roberto, okay? Now, the reason that you cannot compare between Little Joe and Sonny and Jimmy Edwards and Agustin and Freddie and Rubén Ramos, Mexican Revolution, and things like that is because the Lord has worked this thing out, man, where everybody can can get a chunk out of it. I can get a chunk out of it, and so can the next guy. Now, you, no matter what you do with your voice, you're gonna be you. Now, whatever I do with mine, and how I work, as far as hustling, getting my job done, my performances, and whether I record and produce better records than the next guy, well, it's neither here nor there. The thing is, what I do with mine will give me power for myself. What Little Joe does for his organization and how they handle and they produce their business, that's why it's been cut. It's been cut. The Lord has just say, okay, man, I'm not going to put no barrier where you can't go beyond this point. The sky's the limit with what you can do. But look, here's your voice. Here's your more or less something that you can work with as a style. Now here, you go. So you can't get to the point where you're going to say, well, this is better than this. Because either you like it or you don't like it. What you're saying is, I like this one, and I don't like this other guy. Or this one style, I really get off on. I relate to this because it brings me a lot of memories. I grew up with this thing. I like where this guy is going. I'll stick with this guy. You see? But you can't, it's not a question of what's good and what's bad. It's all good. It's just that everybody's going a different direction. And if you can get a mass of people to follow you in the direction that you're going, you're just going to become more popular, and you stay in there longer. I'm here telling you what I feel and the way I think 23 years later from day one where we started.
Okay, perhaps you misunderstood my question. I didn't mean to imply that for you to give me an answer where one group was better than the other. What I was trying to get at is we have said that there is an Onda Chicana. Is there some kind of stylistic similarity that links all the members of mm-hmm. Onda Chicana?
Yeah, and what it's and it's basically.
Is it La Polka?
Okay, I think the polka takes us. Brings us more together than anything else. But there have been a lot of changes. Through the years, there was a lot of changes. La Onda Chicana, basic idea of La Onda Chicana is we're into the variety of different things, and we do them all in one night stand. Where the conjunto would concentrate on polkas as 85% of what they were doing per night, where the grupos tropicales are doing 85% of nothing but cumbias throughout the night, where your top 40 groups can do nothing but rock 85% of the time. La Onda Chicana has 50%, I would consider close to 50% on polkas. Everything else, the other 50%, rather than say, well, okay, we're polkas and that's it, right? We break, and the percentages of what's left, we'll do a little country, we'll do a little rock, we'll do a little, now rock, I mean, up-tempo songs, slow-tempo songs, and then you add a little bit of tropical, and what you have is like five or six different types of music throughout that one night. Mm-hmm. And standing there, you can go from song to song and change automatically into the next thing. So you're bringing like five or six groups all into one group and performing that one job. I agree with you. I think the polka is basically holding us together. Now, The reason that it holds us together is because,
and it's not only the polka but a style of playing it, isn't it?
Yeah, the basic heartbeat of La Polka is there. Now, no matter what adjustments you make, how you want to fix it up with horns, or how you want to fix it up with accordion, or add strings. We have polkas with strings in them. We have polkas with flutes in them. Anything you want to add, you can go ahead and add it, but that main heartbeat is going to be there. The bass, the snare, the guitar that's chang, chang, chang. Okay, you cannot get away from that, man. Yeah. Because if you get away from that heart, from the heartbeat of what a polka is, if you get away from that heartbeat, no longer is it a polka. It'll be something else. I don't know what.
You've come close to getting away from that.
Yeah, we have. And the reason
what
that okay, what we did was that times were changing all the time. As when we started, we set the way to with what we were doing with La Onda Chicana. We are still today, at certain points, still trying to take this thing a different way. We cannot, it's good that it was good at its height. And it's good that the idea, basic idea is there. But see, the only time you progress, the only time that, and I put it this way, the only time that the turtle progresses is when it takes the time to stick out its neck. The rest of the time, puts his head back in his little shell, and he will absolutely go nowhere. He'll stay there. Now, some of the eras that I don't want to mention names because there's some people that still think they're alive and well, but they are no longer in what we consider now, okay, or have not kept up. So as the times are changing, you have got to be making changes yourself to stay alive, because this year's ideas, or last year's ideas, might not help me this year, or it might not help me for next year. It'll help me for last year, but that's going to be it, you see. So you got to always be looking forward to new ideas. Now, we were making our changes. Some of those people back there, the point is that some of those people died back there. They died back there. Their last time was in the 50s, and that was it. Now, we took a lot of their ideas while we were coming through. We took some of their ideas, we adapted them different, and then we try to stay up with now. Now, that's a wrong way of saying that when we started with polkas, it was three changes to the majority of the polkas. When you went into the chorus, you would have a change of melody and maybe a change of chords, but very, very basic changes. Okay, with some of the things that you hear us doing today, we have maybe 10, 12, 15 changes in that same song that could have been presented with three changes. Now, it would be nice, but if you go today with as much as top 40 has been changing the world, with as much as everything needs to progress and needs to go forward, you can imagine where I could have been any time back there with some of those other people that died in the 50s if I'd still be here today playing my three chords.
That's very interesting. Let me ask you this. One of my favorite albums that you did, and it's an album that I was not really familiar with until very recently, is one that's called Los Enamorados.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that album?
Yes, I do.
When I said you yourself did some very unusual things. Do you remember the Bolero E?
Yes.
Do you remember what you did with it?
Yes, I do. I do.
Was
let me tell you that.
Was it a swing?
really. Okay, let me tell you what happened.
Keep that in your head.
Okay.
Now it seems to me that, and I haven't heard every single album put out by every single artist, that particular song E and that particular arrangement is as far as I have seen anyone take the basic polka without violating it or dissolving it altogether.
Mm-hmm.
Now it seems to me that when I see you with this new album that Johnny played for me today, that you have sort of backtracked a great deal.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about that a bit?
Okay.
Why?
Now, what happened was this. Believe it or not, to show you how keen your ear is, I'm going to make a point that's going to really surprise you. When we first decided to make a change was in the album Los Enamorados. We started making different innovations through that whole album, which we would produce off and on later on, which we have. If you'll check out the number, key lock number on Los Enamorados, and then see what's after that, you see us going back and forth, too simple to something progressive. Simple, more sophisticated, simple. Now, the simple ones, believe it or not, have kept us more alive than the progressive thing has.
But, explain that?
Well, it's only our way. It's only our way. No, the people are not going to progress as fast as a musician progresses. A musician is on a trip of learning. He can only cope with the basic ideas so long, and then he's going to want to get his more and more experience. In other words, you go to your job. And you learn how to do one thing, and when you get real good at it, man, believe it or not, the best way I can explain is this. A guy told me one day, he says, look, man. I said, man, you're damn good at that motorbike. He says, yeah, man. He says, I got to the point where I could take this motorbike apart, piece by piece, and put it back, and then I sold it. And I said, man, my God, man, if it took you that long, that to not only master it and ride it real, real good, but take it apart and put it back together. Why did you sell it? He said, because I knew that the next thing was going to happen was that thing was going to turn right around and kill me. Now this is a weird way of making an example for the way the musician's mind is. But he can use basic. He's hungry for learning. The more you work with this thing, the more you learn. Music is very close with medicine, electronics, and some of the things that have no end. I could write songs from now till I couldn't write anymore. I'll pass away, and there'll be 20, 30, 50,000 people writing songs and just keep on going like if nothing happened. When those people die, another 50,000 will pick up from scratch. And there's no bottom to this. So the musician wants to learn more and more and more and more. As we were progressing forward, we were adding some of the ideas that we have learned on our own. Now you take your what we consider a medium musician, and you get him to start taking apart what we have put together, and he will not believe what's coming down, man. Half of it he can't figure out, and half of them will get frustrated with how we put it together, or they totally don't understand at all what happened.
Give me a headache. Let me tell you why. Because for my dissertation, I have to do some musical analysis, and I have to transcribe some of that stuff that you guys have written.
Well, we can help you with it. We can
and
help you.
You guys don't have any charts.
No, we don't do. So that's another thing.
Listening to the record.
That's another thing. That's another thing. We don't have charts. Everything we've learned and all our experience, it's in our minds. It's in our minds. We use it day in and day out to make a living with it and everything. But we can sit down and make charts. Most of these guys all have,
I'm sure they can,
enough schooling and enough experience to be able to take the time. It's just that we change our music around so much to always stay alive, so we won't, you'll only see us maybe two or three times with the same repertoire of music, and then after that it's time, we've made a few changes by then. And it's hard for us to make charts and then drop them and then make new ones. It's just too time consuming. With your musical experience, I'm sure you know that charts are not, They're very time consuming, and they're good because anybody, you could say to anybody here, man, so-and-so can't play, here's the chart, play it, would be nice. But the way we run, our momentum and our lifestyle is so fast that we don't have the time, really.
Let me ask you something. Getting back to Los Enamorados, for an example, I could use any other album, but I happen to like that one. I thought it was a great album.
Mm-hmm, thank you.
I thought Grande Grande was beautiful. I mean, it's just, mm-hmm. Grande Grande captured to me La Onda Chicana at its finest moment. Mm-hmm. I wanted to tell you that.
Thank you.
That and Para La Gente, I guess Little Joe's Para La Gente are two of the finest albums that I have heard in La Onda Chicana.
Mm-hmm.
But how, when you get to do stuff that's that complicated, how do all these minds come together without having just one mastermind doing everything?
Well, that has been a problem, but I try to reach a medium with my people where not only are they maturing themselves, but I kind of play referee here, you know? And so I try to get them to come together and work together because, you know, two or three heads are better than one. So the more they can exploit their ideas, and if it's something worthwhile that will help the song, you have to be very objective. It comes with maturing the musician to become more and more experienced. From where he's going to be on an ego trip at first, we're going to use all my ideas whether you guys like it or not, attitude. He has to mature himself and move himself to grow to the point where he says, well, look, here's my idea. If you like it, fine. If you don't worry about it, but tell me more or less what you need, and then I'll try to come up with something for you. And this is what we've done through the years. Put those people in those frame of mind where you can produce things like Grande Grande. Now, let me make one comment here about, you were saying about Los Enamorados and about Grande Grande. If you remember on Los Enamorados, about the thing that really sticks out in your mind is going to be Los Enamorados. Now, what's going to really stick out in your mind with Grande 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 is going to be Grande Grande Grande. Now, what happened is that we took...
okay.
E? Okay. Well, see, the point I'm trying to make is this. If you run a song and headline the album, the radio station receives the material, they're going to say, well, this is going to be the A song. So, boom, we'll sit in Los Enamorados. Now, when the people say, well, yeah, well, I like Los Enamorados, but man, I wonder what else is on the album. They go and buy the album. And then you'll have one person to say, you know what, that album's pretty nice, man, but E is, man, that's a nice tune, okay? So there you are. He is satisfied because of E. The other guy who liked Los Enamorados will go buy it because of Los Enamorados, okay? You have 10 shots that the songs are going to be liked by different masses of people. That's where sales comes in, and that's where you get to climb one more little step, you know, on your ladder.
So why have you backtracked now, getting back to this idea that you I think you started to explain it in saying that since that time you have done some more complicated
simple
and some simple.
Right.
And so,
okay.
Are you at a simple phase right now? Or
no. We're trying to reach a medium between keeping the musician where he is at his learning, where he's right now going through this phase where he wants to learn. We're letting him learn and be able to put good things together because we're trying to set a direction at the same time, but not telling them, well, look, man, you can't use your creative mind anymore. Here are the basics. You have to stay within these three chord changes. It's hard. It's like telling a drunk he won't be able to drink anymore. It's not going to happen. Maybe he'll slow down a little bit, and that's what we're doing. We're slowing down a little bit. But we're not going to let you lose. We're going to take you in a certain direction. It's going to take a little more work and a little more time. So what we're doing now, we're backing off only because when this, here lately, you know, we've been getting a lot of feedback on oldies and the 50s and all this. We're getting all that flavor back in again, right? In the top 40 media and in our, seems like we're going back ourselves a lot, learning a lot of our old songs and started playing them again because... See, you're only good, your 50s generation is going to get locked into the 50s. The 60s generation is going to want new ideas and new things. Okay, you give them new ideas and new things, but after a while, the generation from the 60s are going to say, wow, man, you know, I heard some songs by those guys that they're recording in the 50s, man. And man, I had never heard it before, man. Why don't you guys start playing it? So now we're starting to feel the feedback of some of the 50s. So now we're bringing some of the 50s back up here again. in the process of the top 40 media going into all this and getting this feedback that we're getting ourselves from our own thing from the 50s. Now we're finding ourselves, okay, you know what? Let's back off a little more. Let's produce more of that material that is simple. And this is what we've done on the last album. Now there's some things, if you look at songs like Búscame.
They're not all that simple.
Yeah, okay. Some of those are a little into the style of Grande Grande.
Yeah.
But there is more...
More conservative, it seems.
Held back than what we were producing lately.
I want to ask you a question about, see if I can remember it, and then I want to get onto something. I know you're...
A completely different.
You've had enough to say, I got to go back to work, so I could be here all afternoon.
Okay, we got the time. I got the time. Go ahead.
But isn't it true that some of the orquestas have traditionally played simpler music than your...
Much simpler.
He's always three-part harmony.
Right. That's it. 1-3-5. That's it. 1-3-5. Everything was 1-3-5.
Freddie Martinez, you know, those guys, mm-hmm. it seems to me, never really did the kinds of innovations that Jimmy Edward,
Let me break some of this down for you. Freddie was doing 1-3-5 harmony, and then he would double track the same 1-3-5 parts, and it gives you that phasing effect. Now, one of the tracks will be just a little bit out of phase from the other, and that's all you got.
That's that fuzzy sound?
Right, exactly. Okay, Agustin is basically doing the same thing.
They sound very much alike.
Kind of a kidding kind of joke we used to hear out through the grapevine was, Freddie, you can understand what he's saying, and Agustin, you can't. That's the only thing different. Anyway, we used to rib him about it all the time. To show you a secret, to show you something, Agustin does not, not only does he not talk like that, but he doesn't really sing like that either. He picked that up from another guy that was starting to make a little noise and died. The guy didn't happen. Agustin picked up the style at the time that he was getting hot, took off with it. The guy does not sing like that at all. It was called, my goodness. The group was... The group was out of Houston at the time. And it was just a little group. It didn't do much, but he got the basic idea. He liked what he heard. It was something really different, and people liked it. So Agustin took off, but that is not Agustin. I'll to show you where the ideas are there. If you can just find them and get on that, put all your ideas on the right vehicle, you can move. You can move. Put them together, and hopefully your act has to be in a way where it's presentable and you can run with it.
Would you say that Agustin and Freddie are more ranchero than Sonny?
They are more ranchero only from the viewpoint that, again, from the same thing we were talking about. I am trying to come up with different, more and more different innovations, taking our music and expanding it where they have stayed with the basic three changes. So if it sounds more ranchero to you to stay within three changes, and it sounds more ranchero to you, then yes, they sound more ranchero than we do. But see, with all the innovations that are coming in, with all different types of phases of music that are staying in, and see, basically, we have been influenced by the white market, by rock and disco and everything else, the Twist and Elvis Presley and Chicago and Earth, Wind and Fire and all this through the years. We've had to keep up with them too and do our own thing. So we have been exposed to all their type of music. So we're taking some of their ideas and added into some of the things that we do. And expands your ideas, expands your talent. You got a chance to do something more than just the three basic changes. They have decided to stay within the laws.
Now, your main market is the Chicano. Is that correct?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right. Does the Chicano expect of certain things of you that you that he expects you not to violate in terms of style? I mean, is there such a thing as doing too much to style so that you lose Chicano market?
The flavor altogether. Well, it's a little hard because it's going to go back to what we were talking about. First of all, they would like for us to stay simple. It's hard for us because we don't necessarily want to stay simple. as long as you don't use again, lose that basic heartbeat, a polka is going to be a polka. Now, how you, like I say, it's a picture.
Dress it up.
The person in the picture is the heartbeat. Now, however you want to color, whatever you want to color around that person, to make him look good or bad or whatever, however you want to color it, it's up to you. It's up to your discretion. The thing is, the person is still there, and the heartbeat is still there. So we have the basic beats that it takes for polkas. They do expect us, or would like for us to stay very simple. The thing is that when I look back at what we have done, and we have had hit after hit, always making new ideas and coming up with different things, it's hard for me to stay back there where some of those people have not done anything in years. And when they do, it'll be the same basic three little changes and hope that they're going to have something. It's hard for me to stay here and say, well, if I stay, why don't I just keep going this way? And I could produce 5-6 albums, not have one song that's going to happen at all, man. So I cannot stay within those laws. They are not necessarily laws. They're things that people that are used to hearing. Now, let me make a comment real quick here about who you're catering to.
Right, I was
and,
gonna ask
and
that.
What and what they expect, what they would like to have. The people that you're selling records to are very simple-minded people. They're very average people.
Are they mainly working-class people?
Chicanos? Yes, they are. They are. And it's your everyday Joe walking in the street day in and day out. You know, he lives in the barrios. He does fix himself up and goes to discos. He does go to rock concerts. He does all this stuff. But mainly, he stays within his own... The biggest percentage of the time, he stays within his own particular environment, his own particular barrio type, his own basic ideas.
For a second. You're saying something that I think is slightly different from what Johnny told me, not today, but one time on the phone. I thought it was a very, very interesting remark that he made. He said, in talking about some of the basic differences between you and Little Joe, and I know there are differences in style, if nothing else.
Sure,
You're two different individuals.
Sure.
But both of you are in the same onda, like the onda chicana, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
He said, Little Joe is more ranchero, and Sonny is. Sonny caters more to the, he said, and he paused for a moment and said, we might call it the middle class. Do you agree with that?
I feel that, and I'm gonna clear that up for you, and I know exactly what he was talking about. This is what it is. Okay. The reason Joe sounds more ranchero is because Joe, again, we were talking earlier about how you can break Latin and talk about Latin and break it into five different things when maybe everybody thinks it's just one basic thing. Okay. Same thing happens here between Joe and I. Joe records songs and flavors more to where Roberto is at of taking what we call barroom songs. Songs that you're going to hear in all your cantinas, man, you're going to hear this. My stuff, Joe will go into tragedias, Joe will go into I'm Gonna Kill You type hard songs. Or she killed me, or if you do this, man, I'm gonna kill you.
Real get down.
Real get down, right. Very home to barrio.
Very violent sometimes.
Very violent, yeah. Pero more into what we consider corridos, that type of thing, okay?
Well, what conjunto groups do.
Right.
They do a lot of stuff.
Of that stuff, right. Now, what I've tried to do, I'm more into the love thing. Boy, girl, she broke my heart. Hey, man, let's get back together. Hey, let's make a go at this. Look, we've made mistakes. Let's fix it up. Let's go. Our type of thing has been pointed more into a little, okay, this is going to sound a little offensive, but believe me, I don't mean it that way. Joe, Freddie, Agustin, some of those people, cater to what we call our lower class. Now, our lower class, we classify it this way. Migrants, real into the water people, people that have more tendency to have problems, marital problems, and be more in the wrong place at the right time. Okay? What we have tried to work for, Jimmy Edwards, myself, Latin Breed, those kind of groups, have gone into what we call the middle class. Now, the reason that we want to cater to that is because in our performances, those people are a little more dressed, for example, like you are. Those people know how to come into a place, and they know how to act, they know how to have a good time, and be cool and maintain a level. the lower class has a tendency a lot of times to cause a lot of problems. Maybe smoke things they ain't supposed to end up in the building. Things like that, that it's okay. I'm not looking down on it, but I like my particular audience. I like my particular audience.
Isn't Little Joe encroaching on conjunto audiences when he plays this kind of?
Very much so. Very much so. Where a conjunto people would not follow me.
Are you sure?
Yeah. Where conjunto people will not follow me, those people have a 75% chance that they're going to follow Joe, believe it or not. Where really they shouldn't be following Joe, because Joe should be classified more to the middle class. But Joe has put him...
He's a very fantastic...
He does. Let me tell you that at the time, let me show you how what a small world it is. You're talking about Los Enamorados. When we made the change in Los Enamorados, if you look in Joe's history, Joe did two, three albums going in the same direction that we were already going.
Exactly.
Now, let me tell you something else. He has also backed off. As a matter of fact, where I kept going, he has backed off long before I did. But see, I got a direction, man, and I'm going, whether I'm going deeper into the middle class or whether I'm going to reach some kind of a medium between the upper class, the high class, and the middle class and pick up two markets later on, I really don't know. Where this will lead to, but for the time being, I got to follow it. Now we have a lot of people. Don't get me wrong. There's a lot of people in the lower class that come see us, and want to understand and want to come up. You know, they don't want to stay there. They were born there, and they've been told all their lives that they have to stay there. But there's a lot of them who don't want to stay there, man. And there's a lot of us. For example, I come from the barrio myself. I come from a family of 11 kids, and we had the John out in the backyard, man, that you go out to that little hole, you know, in that little box with Sears and Roebuck catalog for toilet paper, you know. I come from there, man. Taking a bath in the tin tub and then throwing the water out in the yard. Hey, man, I'm there. I wasn't born in the middle class. I come from there. But I wanted to progress myself, and I'm what I consider the middle class for now, okay?
How about talking about that? Aren't there people actually who are this so-called middle class who is actually co-opted by the American music market, who don't even want to stop to hear you, or who would rather...
Sure. I believe that. I really do believe that. They get locked in into one phase, and that's it.
And aren't there also another kind of orquestas mexicanas, chicanas? Oh, do you know the Galvanes in Corpus Christi? Bobby Galvan, Eddie Galvan?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. But see, that is more classified into... We have more or less replaced that.
Okay. Isn't there an Elizondo here also? Who
yes,
has a big
yes. Mm-hmm. We have more or less replaced that. That comes from the same time of Glenn Beto Villa, Isidro Lopez, Alfonso Ramos, all that era in there.
Nash
see,
Hernandez.
See, yeah. Okay, again, if you'll notice, everything we talk about, it all ties in with each other, whether you like it or not. It just seems to link on and link on. A lot of our roots, when we went into thinking about orchestras, our horn section, actually, even though we were playing English material at the beginning, and then we decided to grow. When we grew, we went into horns. Where does that go to? It goes back to the orchestra. Now we adapted our harmonies and our now ideas to sound more, to develop the onda chicana and send it into the direction that it went, rather than going the basic harmonies that those particular orchestras were using at their time. We're using ours different.
But you know,
but it's basically
have you heard
the same
some
thing.
Of the stuff that Beto Villa and Isidro Lopez?
I sure have.
Isidro Lopez did some really, really heavy stuff in
mm-hmm.
the 50s.
He
now,
did.
A lot of it was very ranchero, but sometimes he came up with stuff that was, I mean, fue la mañana.
Look, if you want to be open-minded about what came down, is that Isidro was leading the way. Don't get me wrong. He was leading the way, and he was using his talent of his people to the best he could at the time. When we came into being, we were 15, 16, 17-year-old kids, man. Our minds were eager not only to learn what they were doing, but go way beyond that point.
Right.
Now, the people that are going to replace us in the 80s and 90s will probably make our stuff look bad, you see, because it seems like intelligence is growing from one generation to the other, which means that in our generation, 50s, 60s, and 70s, I'm one of the few that has lasted three generations, but not staying in the 50s did I go to the 60s. Not staying in the 60s did I go to the 70s. So here we are, when I came out of the 70s, we have to get ready for the 80s. And we have to make the right changes at the right time, or you lose the boat. You miss the boat altogether.
Yes, I heard. I have several recordings of you from the, from. I have Ando Sufriendo y Penando with you.
Okay, well, that was 135. Remember, that was 135.
Come on. Yeah.
That was 135.
And that is light years away from.
From where we are today.
Enamorados.
Sure, sure.
Or grande, grande. Or. Mm-hmm.
If I honestly thought that I could stand here 20 something years later and say I could honestly feel that I could have kept 135 harmony and keep going all these years, I might have done it. But we were thinking pretty big. We didn't think that La Onda was going to be what it is today. But we gave ourselves the benefit of the doubt, and it just grew.
Where is it going right now?
Well, we slowed down quite a bit, only because discos came in. But discos are getting ready to go back out, so we'll get another shot. Discos came in. Believe it or not, disco had tried to get in before, and La Onda was so strong that it didn't have a chance. This is the third time the disco comes and actually got in because it met hands with electronics and got in there tight with sophisticated systems and speakers and stuff. La Onda Tropical has slowed us a little bit because when they came in to hit us in our radio stations where we were already in tight, it gave them a different phase of music. So we were played a little bit less so that the tropical music can be played, and then mariachi, and then conjunto, and it gives the radio station more variety to play. You see, different phases of music. So that's the only reason we got slowed down, a little bit. But we feel that with disco slowing down, we're getting prepared to come back and hit you pretty hard again.
Well, I had a couple of questions. One is that, are Chicanos ready to be delivered musically onto, I mean, don't Chicanos kind of resist getting into other things, at least Tejanos? I mean, it seems to me that Tejanos, they want their polkas. I mean, they'll take the other stuff, but always, don't they always want to come back to the polka?
Sure.
To what do you attribute that? Why haven't Chicanos become like all the other Americans?
Why
must they have Sonny's Osunas and Little Joe's? Is this for lack of acculturation, discrimination, what?
I don't think it's any of that. I think that where variety is the spice of life, and where our roots and the way our blood runs, we're capable of almost adapting and liking almost anything. That we have boleros, that we have cumbias, that we have chachas, valseadas, polkas, right, and all that. Believe it or not, we can appreciate all of it. For some reason, which I don't really totally understand yet, but I should know, and I really don't know, why they keep going back to la polka. I don't know whether it's because of the barrio roots, the way they were brought up, things that reflect to them. There's a lot of sadness in a lot of your polkas can be expressed in a polka tempo, mm-hmm. Almost much better than you can in any one of the other ones, right. The other tempos. For some reason, if you get a little drunk, man, you want to hear a polka more than you do anything else for some reason, especially if it kind of relates to the way you feel or for what usually has happened to you. The only other thing that I can relate to it, man, that's even close is country. Country and Western, man, there's some heavy stuff that the white boy feels, and I think it serves to him the same purpose. Now, he can go Charlie Rich and Ray Charles. Look at Ray Charles. That's a very sophisticated way of country. But they keep coming back to Kenny Rogers, man. They keep coming back to Willie Nelson, which is their roots. So I think that's probably what's happening to us. Yeah, La Raza's going back to La Polka, you know, and figure, Aquí, you know, I've been wanting to tell this chick off, man, because, you know, she hurt me, man. She shouldn't have done that. She hurt me. And this one song says exactly the way
Esta
I feel,
noche
you know.
Me voy de parranda.
Really, man. And it's home. It's
home.
That
was a great song.
Yeah. It's home, man. we were just studying ahorita El Rey, you know.
Yeah,
El Rey is a perfect example of, hey, man, you know. Look, man, I don't care what anybody says, man. I'm the king, man, you know. And when I die, you're going to have to cry, man. You're going to have to cry when I'm gone, man. It's going to hurt, you know.
Yeah.
But that's the way it is.
All right, keeping that in mind about the podcast.
You're going to have to cry, but when I'm gone, man, it's going to hurt, you know?
Yeah.
But that's the way it is. That's the way it is.
All right, keeping that in mind about the polka.
Okay.
And you've been talking about all these five different ways, or maybe even, there might be even a dozen different ways you can break up Latin music.
Mm-hmm.
But of all the styles, think about this for a moment before you answer it, okay?
Okay.
Of all the styles, maybe it's a loaded question. Which one is the one that orquesta holds the closest dialogue with? Do you understand that?
Yes.
With American rock, with salsa, with mariachi, with conjunto, whatever you...
Okay, the best way I can answer this question is, I hope you don't think I'm going around in circles.
All right.
But
I know you're flexible and you borrow from everything.
No, yeah, we'll see. The point I was going to make is that La Onda Chicana is variedad. So if we're off into 15% Chicano, 15% conjunto, 15% rock, 15% country, and whatever is left into something else, that is what La Onda Chicana is. I'm sure that if you ask the same question to a conjunto, he's going to say, look, man, conjuntos is 100% music for la gente Chicana. Yeah, I'm sure that's what he's going to say.
They tell me that you guys go and steal some of the stuff from them and spruce it up. More than one conjunto musician has told me that orchestra musicians rob conjuntos of their material and just insert the wind instruments in place of the accordion.
Mm-hmm. The conjunto has been here for as long as accordion has existed, you know. So the basic ideas, again, they might feel that way because if we like a melody, okay, if we like a melody, and we can see what we can do with it in our particular bag, now, we're not saying that it's theirs or who it belongs to. We like the melody. We know what we hear. We'll put it together and we'll produce it. Now, where it comes from, if you want to get down to talking about someone that that people have used all his material, and I mean every drop, José Alfredo Jiménez is the perfect example, man.
Yeah.
I'm sure he didn't. He was mariachi. Nobody. He can't really say people stole from him. He had so much to offer to the world. And look where he went. In every direction, in every corner that you can get into, José Alfredo is there, man.
Yeah.
In one way, shape, form, or any way that the person could take José Alfredo there, whether I take him there, or whether Joe takes him there, or whether José Alfredo takes himself there, José Alfredo is there. But look at the talent. And I heard, I've done things like Mil Abrazos, Las Ciudades, all that stuff all belonged to yourself.
I think you misunderstood. I wasn't thinking in terms of lyrics, but in terms of style, musical style.
No, we can't steal from them. We can take a song, a basic melody, and build
How
from
about
it.
The way of
but we can't take.
Polka, isn't that very a lot of similarities?
Pardon me, do that again.
The way that conjuntos, the basic drum, bass, guitar. There's a way of accompanying the polka that both orchestra and conjunto use.
Well, see, that's what I commented earlier. That heartbeat cannot be claimed by anybody. That does not belong to conjunto, that does not belong to orquesta, that doesn't belong to nobody. That basic drive is there. Now, however you want to paint the rest of the picture, go ahead and paint it. You want to paint it with an accordion? Paint it with an accordion. You want to paint it with strings or with flutes or whatever. It doesn't matter. That basic idea of the drive and that constant beat, no one can steal it from anybody because that is the basic. If you want to play polka, that's what you're going to play.
But you know what, Sonny? I have some albums in my possession by Polish groups in New York playing polkas. They do not sound like you guys.
No, no. They it's a different like flavor. Look, man, you can go to a German polka, to one from Switzerland, one from Poland. You can go on and on. And there's this little key in there, man, that's going to link us all together. But the key is very small. From then on, it branches and it does something else. Our polkas are not nowhere close to them. Now, you're talking about conjunto that you consider conjunto. Now, if you go to conjunto norteño, it's in a different trip altogether.